I just did a podcast about a village outside Madrid called Morata de Tajuña, a classic village near the capital, with its own history, and yet it's still fairly healthy as a town in the sense that people are still living there. In fact, the population has increased. I think its proximity helps. So people can find life in a small town, but basically be about 30 minutes from the center of Madrid. Anyway, the reason why I was talking about this town was actually some sad news. It had suffered a shocking incident a couple of weeks ago, nearly a month ago now, when the police discovered the bodies of three individuals. Two sisters and a brother, elderly sisters and a brother, who were dead in their home in that town. They had been murdered. I refer you to the previous episode to learn more because it's an interesting story, a tragic story, but a complicated one to review and sum up in just a few seconds. Anyway, while I was looking into the history of this town, getting some background information, I came upon some demographic information about the town. I actually found it in two places. There's this other website I found, and it sort of talked about how the population has risen dramatically over the past couple of decades, which is unusual for a country town, as I say, as I've talked about. Many times there's this sort of rural flight, people leaving these towns and going to the city. This is nothing new. This has been talked about for well over 100 years. Probably it's been accentuated in the last 30 to 40 years, and they're now reaching a point where it's quite a problem, not just because the population in many villages around Spain, especially the center of the country, the population of these villages is decreasing. Also, the surviving population that's there, the few people that are in some of these places, and honestly, in some of these places, we are talking just a handful. The average age for many is probably or close to 50, 60, and above. Anyway, I came across another document describing the town all the way back in the 1840s in an entry from the massive and impressive Geographic Encyclopedia, a project that was supervised and edited by a well-known Spanish politician and former Prime Minister, Pascual Madoz. Thanks to him and also to a certainly large number of researchers, probably doing lots of field work for him. It was called the Geographical, Statistical, and Historical Dictionary of Localities in Spain and its Overseas Possessions, which by then was a fraction of what it used to be, but still we're talking mainly Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. This book is an enormous work, a gigantic production comprised of 16 volumes. And it took Madoz, Madoz, and his team just as many years to complete. It was started in 1834 and finished in 1850. To this day, it is a valuable resource to understanding some basics about what life was like in Spain back then, if only to look at what many of these towns had and didn't have, the type of things I find fascinating. You can draw a lot of conclusions from what you see here. Anyway, that wasn't Madoz's only feat in his life. He actually had a really interesting life. He was a soldier. He participated in the Carlist Wars. He also fought against the French during the 1820s. He did a lot of interesting things. But he also, as prime minister, promoted and passed the most extensive private property confiscation law in Spain's history. These laws were very popular in the 1800s. A fascinating story, as well as a tragic story, but an interesting one in the sense that the intentions were probably better than the results in many ways. But I'll have to tell you about that at a different time. And now I've seen entries about different places in Spain from this book. Sometimes they just call it El Madoz because it's that famous. And I love this stuff. I mean, it has information about just, you know, all sorts of stuff that you find, probably more than you find about these towns in a lot of the Wikipedia entries that you find today, which isn't necessarily saying much, but at the same time, considering all the information that's available and things like that, it's funny, you look at some of the entries in this book that's getting close to being 200 years old, and you'll find a lot more detail in certain ways. And let me show you what I mean. Let's just focus on Morata, and I think you'll get an idea of what you're talking about. It says, this is just reading from the entry. It's in Spanish, so I'm going to be translating basically as I go. It's a town in the province of Madrid. They say 5 leagues away. A league back then was about 5 kilometers. It belonged to the jurisdiction of a town nearby called Chinchon, another very famous town. In fact, it's more famous than Morata. And it belonged to the Diocese of Toledo, which makes sense. The town lies at the base of some hills called cerros. Those are hills that sort of have a flat top to them. And the river Tajuña runs through it, which is why it gets its name. It's basically Morata on the Tajuña. This entry tells you the predominant winds, where they come from the east, south, and west, depending. It talks about the climate being rather humid, damp, which would be an influence from the river. They add what the most typical sicknesses, illnesses that affect the population at that time, which are these intermittent fevers, in Spanish called calenturas. I actually can tell you another story about that and a remedy for it at a different time. They say there are 400 houses, which are 2 stories in general. There are 150 caves that sort of go into the nearby hills. That would be typical of many towns back then. The caves were the refrigerators of the time. People often stored their food there and their wine. There's a small square in the center of the town where the town hall is. There's a jail there. There are 4 tiny or minor squares. The streets have not been paved yet, but apparently they're in fairly good condition. There are 2 hospitals, one for the poor who are from the town, and another for poor people who are going through the town. And then they'll tell you some information about who founded each one. A man named Antonio López founded the first hospital all the way back in 1670. It mentions a few things about the conditions. There had to be 3 beds. They had to receive food and medical assistance and pharmaceutical supplies. And then it goes on to mention some things about how it finances this, where it gets its money from. At least that's what it seems. And then it talks about the other hospital. It goes into quite a bit of detail, financial detail. It's pretty interesting here. Then it goes on to talk about the schools. There's a primary school for 110 boys. It mentions the schoolmaster and the teacher and his salary. And on top of that, I guess they get some sort of extra pay if they want from the students or the families. Then there's another school for girls. There are 40 girls at that school, and the teacher there received a different salary. It was a woman, and her salary was inferior. And that's not really surprising. And also, she gets some extra pay. That's what I gathered from what it says here, although it's not 100% clear. And then it goes on to mention the town palace. And by palace, they usually talk about the wealthiest, the biggest house, basically mansion in the town. And it belonged to the Count of Altamira. And it had lots of rooms and beautiful rooms and a very pretty garden with different fountains. I mean, all this detail that they're giving you is incredible. Then the parish church, St. Mary, Santa Maria, and its parish priest, and they give some details about his situation. There are four smaller churches known as ermitas, sometimes translated as hermitages. One is inside the town, within the town limits, and this goes to the Virgin of Solitude. Another one is for the Virgin of the Rosary. And then there's the patron Virgin Mary of the town, Our Lady of the Antigua, which is a Virgin Mary which is actually quite popular in the center of Spain. You see it in different towns. And there's a famous chapel in Seville which honors this Virgin Mary. And I believe the island in the Caribbean, Antigua or Antigua, as some people say, it gets its name from this Virgin Mary. Three of these small churches are in not very good condition, according to this entry. And the last one is made of rock and is quite spacious inside. There's a graveyard there, and there's another one near the ermita or the church, Our Lady of Solitude. And I guess the graveyard there is well placed and it doesn't harm the town public health. Interesting that they're thinking of these things at that time. It goes on to tell you, for example, where the townspeople get their drinkable water. Apparently, it came from a fountain or a spring that was in a hill north of the town. It was for their use and also for the livestock. And another fountain that was near a plaza or square called Constitution Square. And it goes on and talks about the location of this town with respect to nearby towns. And then it talks about the area, the agricultural, mainly agricultural situation around the town in terms of acres. Basically, they use a term called fanegas, and they have irrigated land and dry land. Talk about the number of grapevines that they have, 830,000. And then olive groves. Some of this land has been sold off in the confiscation laws that I was telling you about. Then they talk about there's a workhouse, there's an oil and olive oil mill. They just call it a molino. There's another word for it. I can't recall right now off the top of my head. Now I recall. I think it's Almazara. That's what it's called. And so it has that. It has an area for wood to get firewood. It has good esparto grass, another sort of forest nearby. Yeah, probably, I don't know what kind it would be. It depends. It might be pine trees. A quarry. And then they say in the hills to the north, there's another quarry of a different type of rock. And in the south, there's plenty of material to make plaster. So as you can see, they really get into a lot of detail here. They mention the importance of the Tajuña River. And obviously, it waters the land, so there's sort of natural irrigation. They also have two flour mills that are being powered by the river. Another mill that was built and planned for making thread or string. Hilos, that's what it is in Spanish. I'm really not sure what they mean exactly by that here. But interestingly enough, it hasn't been used yet since it was built. So this is the type of detail they provide you with. And along the river, you have different vegetable gardens. And in the river, there's apparently sort of an island. And there are two places where sort of paths so people can walk along the river, one going in each direction. They've also planted quince trees. That's a fruit that you usually, what you do is you boil it and you turn it into a kind of jam. It's really good. And other fruit trees of all kinds. They also talk about the roads that lead to the nearby towns are in terrible condition. They say that the mail comes 3 times a week. And then they move on to talk about production, agricultural production, mainly grains, lots of wine. In fact, they say in abundance, and also pulses, which are like chickpeas and lentils and things like that. And that would be typical from that part of the country. It also has livestock for wool, that is sheep, and also cattle. There's also small game, fishing, even river eels, lots of them apparently. In terms of industry and commerce, basically the big one is agriculture, but there's also a distillery that makes aguardiente, which would have been typical, especially in that area in Madrid. There's a lot of tradition of making aguardiente, distilled alcohol. And there is a shop that makes pretty standard cloths. That's how they describe it. And they also mention that once again, the flour mills, the almazara, the oil mill. They talk about the importance of exporting wine and pulses, and they import whatever they needed, in other words, whatever that town didn't have. Then they get to the population, and this is interesting. They say there's 513 vecinos, which is often the normal term for inhabitants of a city or a town. But then they go on to talk about 2,482 almas, which is souls. So that's Souls. So that's the overall population. And why is that? Well, the vecino, the 513, were probably the household heads, mainly the men, and they were given a different category. And everyone else included would make up this this term souls, almas. So the total population was actually 2,482. Then it seems as if they pretty much wrap this up by talking about the actual capital produced, the capital that is taxable, and its tax obligations. So it's wow, there's a lot here. And then finally, it makes a recommendation that they think would help increase the wealth of this town, and that would be the building of a better road that could take the products from the town up to the main road that goes to Valencia, and that would certainly make things easier for the important exporting of wine, which was the main product here from what I gather. They say that the hill is quite steep and it's not easy for the carts or whatever were being used to move up there because they were steep and in bad condition. And that's how they wrap it up. But anyway, as you can see, boy, there's just a lot. And I'm sort of going over this quickly. With this, you could actually go in and start investigating more. Yeah, I think it's an interesting book. It certainly is. As I said, I've seen references to different towns, and it really gives you an interesting idea. We know what this city or this town produced, you know what was important to its economy. We know things about that are positive about the town and things that need to be improved. So if you're into detail the way I am, if you're into statistics and demographics, it's a fun book to look for. El Madoth. I don't have the 16 volumes here at home, but when I come across an entry here and there, it's certainly worth taking a look at. And that's all we have for today's episode. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain-Demain. Please feel free to leave us any comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain-Demain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.